Support for The Common comes from Bluey's Big Play. Join Bluey, Bingo, Bandit, and Chili in their first ever live stage show, a fun-filled show made for the whole family at the Box Center Wang Theater, May 18th and 19th. Tickets at boxcenter.org. Support for The Common comes from the law firm of Davis Malm. Whether you're a private business, a public company, a municipality, a nonprofit, or in-house counsel, their business attorneys help achieve your short and long-term goals. DavisMalm.com, DavisMalm.com.
WBUR Podcasts, Boston.
I'm Darryl C. Murphy, and you're listening to The Common. WBUR reporter Simone Rios, welcome back.
Hey, it's good to be back, Darryl. It's been a minute.
Yeah, man, it's been a little minute. You know, a lot of things happening.
Seriously.
But we are here, and we're about to get into a story of yours. Early last year, the Biden administration rolled out a policy to allow temporary entry for up to 30,000 people a month from Cuba, Haiti, Nicaragua, and Venezuela. Now, to qualify, people need to clear a background check and have a U.S. sponsor who pledges to support them financially. If approved, they're allowed to live and work in this country for 2 years under something called humanitarian parole status. Simone, now you looked into this program and you learned what it has meant for some members of Boston's Haitian community. First, tell us more about this program and why the Biden administration felt it was necessary for these four countries.
Yeah, so humanitarian parole, Darryl, is something that actually dates back to the post-World War II period. I believe it was Hungarian folks who were facing strife back home and mm-hmm. were provided with this status, humanitarian parole. At least since the 1990s, every administration has used humanitarian parole policies in one way or another. So Biden comes into office, the U.S. exits Afghanistan. Humanitarian parole is applied to Afghanis who are fleeing the country. Later, it's applied to Ukrainians when Russia invades Ukraine. And then at the beginning of 2023, because of the situations in the four countries we're talking about, Cuba, Haiti, Nicaragua, Venezuela, all countries that have varying degrees of political and economic turmoil.
Okay.
Here we're talking about Haiti specifically, which is obviously in a very difficult situation right now.
So far, roughly 400,000 people have received parole status. Tell us what this program looks like in practice, particularly for the family from Haiti you spoke with.
Right now, Haiti is pretty close to what's considered a failed state, just having almost next to no form of government. When there's crimes in the neighborhood, there's nobody to turn to. So this all mm-hmm. comes out of the reporting that we're doing here, talking with local Haitians. But I focused on a guy named Hananya Pierre-Louis. He came from Haiti when he was 15 to Boston. But over the course of 25 years, from when he came at the age of 15 to now he's 40 years old, there had never been a way for him to bring family members over until the Biden administration announces this program. And he immediately applied, I believe, for 6 or 7 family members. 3 of them have been admitted so far. They came about a year ago.
So I want to be mindful here about how we talk about the chaos in Haiti, because many experts have pointed out that throughout its history, countries like France and the U.S. have played a big role in hindering Haiti's development.
For sure.
Having said that, what is the application process like for this program?
So the application process, as I understand it, it doesn't cost anything in the case of mm-hmm. Cuba, Haiti, Nicaragua, Venezuela, CHNV. And it's pretty easy to qualify. Like, pretty much anybody who's in the country legally can sponsor somebody from these four countries. And the people from the four countries, they don't have to show that they meet any specific criteria. They do have to clear a background check, and there are certain rules in terms of how many people you can apply to sponsor based on your income. But as soon as he could, so, you know, the program takes effect in January of 2023. Within days, he had applied for all these relatives. And within months, I think it was 3 or 4 months, he got word that three of his family members could come over.
That's a pretty, I hate to say lucky, because there's a limit on the amount of people accepted in this program.
Exactly. And now it's taking a lot longer. I understand that the backlog is over a year at this point, and there are more than 1 million people who are waiting for their applications to come through, including family members of the people that Hananya brought over.
Now, Simone, I gotta say, when I hear the phrase humanitarian parole, it sounds cringy because I think of incarceration.
Right. It has a criminal undertone.
Yeah. So I'm wondering, how are people treated by officials? What are the rules, and what kind of penalties do they face? And just how difficult can this program be on them?
Well, look, the whole idea of humanitarian parole for in the case of these four countries was to address the arrival of a huge number of folks arriving at the Mexico border. And so that's the real treacherous part. When people are traveling up through Central America, facing all types of terrible situations, people die on the way. There's many reports of rapes and kidnappings. So the idea behind this program was to say, hey, don't come here, don't come to the border, but apply from your country. And that way, you know, we'll be able to conduct the background check, we'll be able to look at your situation and give you permission to come legally by flying in.
So I guess trying to protect people from the dangerous journey, perhaps that's the humanitarian part.
Exactly. And I believe the reason why they refer to it as parole is because it's temporary.
Understood. All right, Simone, I want to take a break here. But when we get back, I want to talk about the pushback. This program is being targeted by opponents, including former president and presidential candidate Donald Trump.
Oh, yeah.
So we'll be right back.
Let's do it.
Bluey, Bingo, Bandit, and Chili are coming to a theater near you.
Do you want to play musical statues with us?
Join the Healers in their first ever live stage show, Bluey's Big Play. A fun-filled show made for the whole family. It's Bluey brought to real life. Book now for Bluey's Big Play. We can't wait to see you there.
Bluey! Politics has never been stranger or more online, which is why the politics team at Wired is making a new show, Wired Politics Lab. It's all about how to navigate the endless stream of news and information and what to look out for. Each week on the show, we'll dig into far-right platforms, AI chatbots, influencer campaigns, and so much more. Wired Politics Lab launches Thursday, April 11th. Follow the show wherever you get your podcasts.
So, Simone, we are talking about a policy known as humanitarian parole, where up to 30,000 people a month from Cuba, Haiti, Nicaragua, and Venezuela, they can apply to come to the United States and stay for 2 years. I want to know, how many people overall are here in Massachusetts through this program?
I wish I knew the answer to that, Daryl. We did ask the Department of Homeland Security for that information.
Okay.
This week, actually, there was a congressional committee that acquired some documents that actually has a list of the top 15 airports where people are arriving. The first one is Miami, followed by Fort Lauderdale in Florida, then New York City. Boston is not even in the list of top 15.
Oh, wow.
But that's something we'll be looking at going forward.
Right, right. I'm also curious to know, since people who come here through the program, they have only 2 years, how does this program play a role in the pathway to citizenship?
There is no pathway to citizenship under this program. historically, there have been extensions.
Yeah, because your foot's in the door.
Right. And you know, opponents to the program will point out that, like, what are the chances that these folks are going to be leaving after 2 years? I mean, is the situation in Haiti, in Venezuela, in Nicaragua, in Cuba, are those situations going to improve to the point where people are like, oh, you know, now my country is free and full of opportunity, I'm going to go back. Mm-hmm. One immigration lawyer I spoke to said, basically, if you apply for asylum, there's a years-long backlog. But if you're in the asylum process, you can stay significantly longer than that.
How vulnerable to deportation are the people in this program?
You know, that's an interesting question, because all of this happens in the context of our political climate in this country. You have the Republicans, led by Donald Trump and others, really taking aim at humanitarian parole.
They flew 325,000 migrants, flew them in over the borders into our country. So that really tells you where they're coming from. They want open borders, and open borders are going to destroy our country.
There's a lawsuit led by Texas, followed by 20 other Republican-led states for the Department of Homeland Security to end this program. They say that the arrival of all these immigrants is a financial burden and that the states are the ones who are paying for this. Now, we should point out that the whole idea behind the program is that these folks are sponsored by family members who agree to, you know, provide them housing and to sort of help them get on their feet at least for 2 years. But it's certainly become a real lightning rod in the political debate in this country.
All right. Let's say this program is here to stay. What happens for the folks you spoke with after their 2 years are up?
They don't know. You know, in the case of one of the women I spoke to, Hananya's niece, her name is Karen Cesar. She's in Roxbury Community College, enrolled in a two-year program. So her goal is to graduate. What they're more concerned with right now is getting other family members out of Haiti. So Karen has two sisters who are minors, under 18, and her mom back in Haiti, in Port-au-Prince. After hearing Karen talk about, you know, being in touch with her mom, getting panicked phone calls about violence in their neighborhood, I reached out to her mom. Her name is Maxdala. We're only reporting her first name because she fears some kind of repercussions. But listen to some of the tape that we got from her. She's speaking in French, being translated into English by her daughter.
About safety, it can be really hard. It is really hard because for now, the kids do not go to school, but it also gets scared them and scare us in general to hear gunshots all the time, to hear about the violence. Let's see.
She had applied for humanitarian parole a year earlier, and then a few days before our story ran, she got word that her application had been rejected. So, you know, they could apply again and, I guess, you know, start all over. They're holed up in their house right now in Port-au-Prince, and they really, you know, they can't work. The kids can't go to school. So they're hoping to get out of there, but they don't have a lot of options.
Man, Simone, I hate to leave it on that note. You know, I'm definitely wishing her and her family the best. Thank you so much for this story, Simone, and coming through to talk to us about it. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me on, Daryl.
That's WBUR reporter Simone Rios. And that's our show for today. Thank you so much for listening to The Common. If you want to get in touch with us, please hit us up on Instagram at WBURTheCommon or send us an email at thecommon@wbur.org. I'm Daryl C. Murphy, and I will talk to you tomorrow.